Chapter 1. Azalea watched a fat brown spider climb over a stone right in front of her nose and carry on toward a leaf just beyond it. She hated spiders, but she forced herself not to move so much as an eyelash. It would ruin everything. She had been lying flat on her stomach with one ear pressed to the ground in the spot Azemar told her about for what seemed a very long time. If she moved, she'd have to start all over again. "Half a league west," he had said, "by the side of the road that leads from Pamiers to Foix." She went over and over his instructions. "You have to be patient. Let the shadows grow for at least a thumb's length before you give up." Azemar, who was no better than she was except that he was a boy, told her he could lie still enough to hear a worm crawling just in that place, and she was determined to prove that she could too. So far, she hadn't heard anything other than the everyday sounds of the forest. A handful of crows squabbling over some carrion just beyond the crest of the hill, the chucking of squirrels chasing each other up and down a tree. She wished they would all be quiet. Then, at long last, her ear picked up something. A rumbling, deep in the earth. At first it was very faint, but as she listened, it grew. And grew. And grew. "That's definitely not a worm," she thought. But it certainly wasn't a normal forest sound either, and it was coming toward her fast from the northwest. Azalea flattened herself even harder against the forest floor so she would remain concealed when whatever it was passed by. When the noise was so loud, she thought that at any moment it would crush her, she peeked up through her lashes. Three men on horseback trotted straight toward her. A knight in chainmail with a white cross on his circuit led them. The second rider wore a leather tunic and had a longbow across his back, and the third wore only a short green tunic and soft shoes with pointed toes. The knight's shield flapped in time with the horse's gait. All three of the men stared straight ahead. When they were at their closest, Azalea could have stretched out her arm and touched a horse's leg. She squeezed her eyes shut to protect them from the dirt and flying bits of earth and debris struck up by the hooves. A stone hit her head and she bit her tongue to keep from crying out. Soon the sound faded, and Azalea knew the riders were well past and hadn't noticed her. So she opened her eyes again. That's when she saw it. Right in front of her, in the middle of the highway, lying as if carefully placed so that she should discover it upon opening her eyes, lay a small cylindrical object with a cord tied around it. Azalea darted forward and scooped it off the ground. It wasn't like anything she had ever seen or held. Not hard or solid, but pleasingly crisp, like an autumn leaf not yet dry enough to crumble, and it gave when she pinched it. One of the riders must have dropped it. She most certainly would have seen something so unusual if it had been there before. Azalea tucked her treasure away in the secret pouch inside her tunic and scampered off into the woods to return to the encampment where she, Azemar, and a dozen other children lived, under the hostile eyes of Domna Catalot and her brothers. "Wait until I tell Azemar. This was even better than hearing a worm." He'd have to wait, though. She didn't want to give up her secret too quickly and spoil the fun of having one. The next day, leaving the younger children to forage for mushrooms, Azalea and Azemar ran off into the woods to a stream they knew of where they could fill their buckets with fresh water for the camp. There was a stream closer by, but they had long ago decided that this one, well out of sight and hearing of the Catalots, was enchanted and the water that ran through it held miraculous powers. The September rain soaked through their already threadbare tunics, but it didn't bother them as they sat on the bank in their special place, tossing sticks into the rushing water and watching them race downstream. "You think you can keep a secret from me, but you can't." Esimar yawned and stretched his arms out, peeking out of the corner of his eye to see Azalea's reaction. "What secret are you talking about?" Azalea examined a crack in her fingernail. How could he know she was keeping something from him? "The one you've been hiding from me since yesterday, and which I will discover as soon as we return." Azalea laughed. "You think I'm stupid enough to leave it?" Before she could move a muscle, Azimar's hand tightened around her wrist. "So, you found something." "I thought so. What is it? A precious stone? If you give it to me now, I won't torture you." "You can't frighten me. I'm faster than you." As she felt Azimar's muscles tense for action, Azalea wriggled her hand out of his grip and leapt up to run. But Azimar's reflexes had been baptized at the altar of survival. He grabbed her ankle and she fell face down onto the soggy forest floor, tasting dirt and animal dung. Azimar sat on her behind, taking hold of her hand and pushing it up against her back until she screamed for mercy. "All right, you win. I'll show it to you." "You'll give it to me." "No!" Azimar pushed her hand up more. She yelped again, then wilted. "All right, stop." Azimar let go of Azalea's wrist, and she slowly, painfully restored her arm to a normal position. He always pushed her as far as he could without doing her any serious damage. "You'll have to get off me if you want to see what I found." Azimar raised himself up so she could turn over, then inched back and grasped her knees, pressing them to the ground. "You're still hurting me," she said. "Give it to me and I'll stop." He shifted more of his weight onto her knees. Azimar didn't used to be so strong. She hated the idea of giving in to him. But with a choice between that and pain, she had no other option. She reached into her pocket and held up the scroll, just out of Azimar's reach. "I found it. I get to see what it is first." "I'll cut the cord with my teeth for you," Azimar said. "No, I want to be able to put it back exactly the same." Her small fingers soon picked the tight knot apart. She put the cord back into her pocket. The scroll kept wanting to curl up again, so she had to hold the corners in place with her fingers. Azalea didn't know what she expected to find. It couldn't have held anything valuable. She knew that. Still, somehow she hoped for more than just lines in black scratched across in regular patterns, from the top to the bottom. She tossed the disappointing treasure to Azimar and flopped back to lie on the ground. The rain had eased, and the fine mist it left behind felt soft on her face. Azimar released her knees. "What do you suppose it is?" "I don't know. I don't care." He turned the scroll this way and that, smelled it, tested it with his teeth. "It's made from an animal. And these lines." "I know." Azimar's eyes lit up. "It's magic. It's a talisman." What magic could there be in a piece of animal skin with black lines on it? "It's a spell. This is writing. I've seen it before, but I can't remember where. It says something." "We can pretend it says whatever we like and make it our charm." Esmar jumped up and skipped around her, randomly picking up stones and hurling them into the forest. Creating stories they could act out with the other children, all orphans from Tolosa, transported them into a magical world where everything was possible, everyone was kind, and no one ever went hungry. This mysterious scroll was as good as a toy to them and might as well take its place in their imaginary kingdom. Azalea picked it up from the ground where Azimar dropped it. She had to admit, there was something about it, appearing as it did out of nowhere. Perhaps it really was magic. She stood and stretched her arms above her head, the scroll in her hand, and skipped along with Azimar. "And it came to me, so if you take it from me, you might be cursed." Azimar stopped skipping. "The others can be wood sprites, and you and I are the king and queen of the forest. Spirit of the forest, awake and hear me!" Azalea lifted the scroll to the sky. All at once, the clouds, so thick and dark all day, parted, and a shaft of sunlight pierced through, turning the drops that clung to the leaves and twigs into sparkling crystals. The hole in the clouds soon sealed itself up again, and big raindrops pelted them anew. Azimar and Azalea looked at each other, their eyes wide. "What took you so long?" Neketalot, the matriarch of the clan of thieves they'd been traveling with as long as Azalea could remember, cuffed each of them on the ear when she took their buckets of water. The men had caught a small fish, and what nourishment it contained was being stretched to feed the entire group. Rainy weather left everyone disgruntled. Better to stay out of sight as much as possible, or risk a beating for no good reason. When the young ones spied Azalea and Azimar, they hurried to greet them and hid behind them as they waited for their only meal of the day. By sundown, the rain had stopped, promising fine weather the next day. Azimar and Azalea beckoned the children to a far corner of the camp to tell them about their discovery and weave their tale of magic and sorcery. With enough imagination, the scroll, with its mysterious writing, could keep them entertained for weeks. The young ones gazed at Azalea with awe for finding such a promising treasure. Day by day, Azalea and Azimar's story became more and more elaborate and inventive. They played at knights and damsels and evil monks and heretics. They wove a story of kings and princes and beggars and thieves, enriching it with whatever scraps of memory and knowledge they could stitch together into a comforting blanket of fantasy to mask the hardships of their miserable lives. A full moon passed after the children began occupying their days with their new game when fever broke out in the camp. The youngest and weakest child was first to perish, and after that, Neketalot herself. The old woman had never been a source of warmth and comfort, but she had kept the baser instincts of her brothers at bay. Since her death, and that of another child, and soon after that one of the brothers, the remaining children took to spending more and more time away from the encampment. The men stopped pretending to feed them, and were as likely as not to lash out and beat someone just for looking at them. One morning, as Azimar led the diminished band in a game that was part entertainment, part foraging for food, he heard a strange sound coming from the direction of the encampment and grabbed Azalea by the arm as she ran past. "What?" He put his finger to his lips. He heard voices, angry ones. "It's Gascon and Hugos. Roger said they'd made threats." "That's nothing new. Shh. Listen." The younger children were still running and laughing, too busy playing to notice anything unusual.
Everyone, silence! Azimar roared.
They all stopped what they were doing in mid-gesture. Curses and shouts of,
Fatyes! Sorcerers! And you can't hide from us!
Grew more and more distinct. Azimar sprang into action, taking the young ones two at a time by the arms and shoving them into the forest in different directions.
Run, all of you, and hide! Don't let anyone find you, hear?
Fear gave everyone wings, and in an instant, they had all disappeared into the underbrush. Only Azalea and Azimar remained.
What is it?
Azalea looked back and forth from Azimar to the sound of the approaching men.
They want to get rid of us.
Why?
They think it's our fault, the fever.
Let's go together,
said Azalea. She didn't remember life before Azimar.
Better not,
he said, poised on the balls of his feet, ready to spring away.
I'll meet you later, he said.
Where? In Foix?
No, too close. Béziers.
Where's Béziers?
East.
Azimar leapt forward, kissed Azalea on the cheek, and tore off into the dense woods, looking back at her one last time as he fled.
Run!
He yelled. At that moment, Gascon broke from the forest into the clearing.
Stop, you witch!
Azalea sprinted away in the opposite direction from Azimar. She knew the contours of the forest floor as well as any animal, and in only a few moments the men's shouts had faded into the distance. Just keep running, she told herself. But when she could no longer hear any voices at all, she glanced over her shoulder. That was all it took. A fleeting lapse of concentration. She caught her foot on a protruding tree root and fell, twisting her ankle. She tried to get up and keep running, but the pain shot into her leg and she fell again. The voices approached, growing louder and louder. All she could do was lie there, helpless, waiting to be caught. I'm going to die. Fear was no stranger to Azalea. It had been her companion every day as long as she could remember. But this was different. This was a certainty, and she had no escape from it. Azalea did something she'd never done before, at least not as long as she could remember. She started to cry. Not silent tears, but dry, wrenching sobs that startled the birds, made the deer look up in alarm, and would soon tell the murderous Gascon exactly where to find her. In the woods nearby, an odd sound made Frère Goncourt pause from his daily foraging for plants to take back to his hut and record in his herbarium. He heard a cry that wasn't like any animal he knew to roam these woods, woods that were as familiar to him as the Psalms. He moved toward the sound, and as he drew nearer, his ears picked up another disturbance deeper in the forest. Angry men's voices, and they weren't very far off, cursing and railing, shouting witch and sorcerer.
Dear, dear,
he said, and continued toward what was clearly a cry of distress. And in another few paces, his toes came in contact with its source. A child? No children ever wandered there. The nearest village was many leagues away. Dirty, bedraggled, eyes red, nose running, and an ankle that had swelled up like a melon. The pathetic little mite at his feet had obviously been running from someone. No doubt the angry men whose voices he could hear.
What's all this?
He placed his basket on the ground and felt the wounded ankle. The child stopped weeping and shrank away from him, its eyes dancing with terror.
I won't hurt you. Let me take you where I can tend to your injury, he said, and then added after a glance in the direction from which the sound of voices was now accompanied by the sight of approaching men. You will be safer under my roof than out here all alone. There are wolves, you know, and they are as hungry as the people. Come, lift your arms.
The child whimpered, but didn't struggle against him as he easily hoisted it up over one shoulder.
A lamb weighs more than this, he thought.
Frère Goncourt picked up his basket with his free hand and hurried away, praying that the following men would not choose to take the same treacherous route as he did, up the side of the hill toward the Abbey of Bulbona.